Thank you. Well, it's unnecessary to say how to say much about how grateful I am for the honor and the wonderful atmosphere, and how gratifying it is to join a group of people who I greatly admire and respect, some of whom former recipients are close personal friends for many years. On an occasion like this, this is a phrase that resonates in my mind, often does, in fact. That's a declaration that was issued by Bertrand Russell and Albert Einstein in 1955. It was a call to the people of the world, a plea, actually, to face a question that's, as they put it, stark and desperate and inescapable. Either mankind will put an end to war, or we will put an end to the human race. And that's... they were thinking, of course, of nuclear war primarily, and since that time we have come very close to a virtually terminal nuclear war a number of times. The danger continues. In fact, right today it's very much alive. The area of primary concern now is West and South Asia, that region. And in fact, if you've been happen to have been reading the papers carefully for the last few days, you'll notice that there have been exercises in the Eastern Mediterranean, either actually intended or psychological warfare, aimed at bombing of Iran, Israeli actions. There's been a rash of newspaper articles and newspaper reports in the Israeli press about an apparent decision of the government to proceed with bombing Iran's nuclear sites. Very strikingly, there's been a long series for some months now of declaration statements by former high security officials in Israel, heads of Mossad and so on, people who rarely say anything, speaking very strongly, denouncing the plan, saying there'll be disastrous and horrible effects. They wouldn't be coming out publicly unless they had some information that these are plans are actually in the works. It's worth remembering that Israel did strike a nuclear reactor once before, Osirak reactor in Iraq, and though it's not too well known, there was credible information right away, and it has since been confirmed even by U.S. intelligence, that that bombing attack actually initiated Saddam Hussein's nuclear weapons program. Now, the reactor, it appears, was only capable of producing low-grade uranium for energy purposes. But after the attack, a secret nuclear weapons program was initiated, and we know where that led to. And it's conceivable that that could happen again, along with other very threatening and dangerous consequences that could follow from an attack of that sort. We'll know very soon whether it's happened, but it's too close for comfort. There are things that can be done about these problems. I should say that for several years now, U.S. Analysts have been arguing that the most dangerous problem in the world, a security problem, is Iran's possible development of nuclear weapons. And it's interesting to see why they think it's such a danger. The question is rarely asked, but there is an authoritative answer to it. The authoritative answer comes from the highest sources, namely the Pentagon and U.S. intelligence. They give annual reports to Congress on the global security situation, and they've, of course, discussed this repeatedly, and they do agree that the Iranian potential for nuclear weapons, whether they're doing it or not, they don't know, is an extreme danger. And the reason, they say, is because it's going to be part of Iran's deterrent strategy. They have a detailed analysis of the Iranian military. They argue that it's very small, its even expenses are very low, even by the standards of the region, and it's aimed specifically for defense. Its goal is to deter an invasion long enough for diplomacy to set in. And they add that if Iran is developing nuclear weapons, that would be part of their deterrent strategy. So why is a deterrent strategy such a threat? Well, very simple. A deterrent strategy can deter. It can prevent the United States and its allies from free, unconstrained military action in the region, because there'll be a deterrent. And that's a threat if you, of course, intend to carry out military action, military attacks at will. And that's the threat. And we should recognize that our own countries are interpret the possibility of a deterrent as a very serious threat. It tells us a lot about ourselves and about the potential for very dangerous consequences, many of which, some of which are in process right now, others can come. Is there a way to deal with these problems? Well, there's a kind of a narrow way, which has enormous international support, and that is to move towards developing a nuclear weapons-free zone in the Middle East. Now, there are several such initiatives around the world, Africa, Pacific Islands, other places. They have not really been implemented, and it's important to know why. So take the African nuclear weapons-free zone. There's one impediment to its being implemented, and that's because Britain and the United States insist that an African island, Diego Garcia, which was a former British dependency, be available for nuclear weapon storage, nuclear submarines, and so on. They use it as one of the main bases for the bombing in Central Asia. Obama has recently built it up to extend it so that it has facilities for nuclear submarines. That means submarines with nuclear-tipped missiles. Well, as long as that is going on, the African nuclear-free zone can't really be implemented. And the same is true in the Pacific area. The Pacific nuclear-free zone was held up at first by France, which wanted to use its Pacific dependencies for nuclear weapons testing. I think that was about 20 years. They finally finished their tests, but now it's being held up by the United States and its British ally, and maybe Australia is involved, which want to use, and in fact are using, the Pacific dependencies for a transit of nuclear-armed naval vessels, and in fact sustaining nuclear weapons bases there. Well, what about the Middle East, the most dangerous one? There's an impediment there, too. Support for a Middle East nuclear-free zone is so broad that the United States has been compelled to formally agree to it at the every 5 years, there's a non-proliferation treaty review meeting. Last one was New York. And overwhelming support for moving in this direction. And the Obama administration, Hillary Clinton was the spokesperson, agreed that, yes, it's a very good idea, but with a qualification, several qualifications. It's a good idea, but not now. And furthermore, there's a condition. Any nuclear weapons-free zone will have to exclude Israel and, in fact, exclude any requirement that other states provide information about anything they're doing to support Israeli nuclear weapons. Well, okay, that kills that idea. So yes, now we have this tremendous danger, danger of a deterrent to our actions, and it may move on to a devastating war with all kind of horrible consequences. Well, there are other ways, more far-reaching ways, to deal with the problem generally. A friend of mine, I've actually forgotten who, an Australian friend maybe here, a while back sent me a book of a collection of Australian writers, short essays on nuclear weapons. It was in 1986, the International Year of Peace. And there was a comment, but there was an Aboriginal poet had a comment which is so eloquent that I don't want to paraphrase it. So if I can find it, I'll actually read it. Probably won't be able to. The comment was this. There will come a time when our mother, whom the invaders so ruthlessly raped by cutting down her trees, by slaughtering her creatures, and mining her minerals, will retaliate. Are we so impudent as to expect that we can survive her backlash? I speak long before the white man came to this land. The dangers of which I speak long before the white man came to this land. In the Northern Territory, there's a green ant dreaming. It is a legend about what will happen if the yellow metal, uranium, is taken from the ground. A giant ant will grow and will devour the living earth. And that's what's happening. That's the point of the comment, and that's in fact what's happening. And one way to stop the proliferation of nuclear weapons is simply to prevent the materials from reaching the developers. And the fact that it'll devour the living earth is all too dangerous, all too threatening. That's what Russell and Einstein were warning about. Well, these comments open up contemplation of a different threat, which actually wasn't evident at the time that Russell and Einstein were issuing their warning, but is very evident today. I learned about it myself about 40 years ago when two personal friends, well-known earth scientists, actually the chairs of the Harvard and MIT Earth Sciences Department, began to talk about recent discoveries that were emerging about what we now know of as global warming. Those were the first indications that there's a serious problem coming. And by now, it's a very serious problem and recognized to be the International Energy Association just last couple of months ago issued its latest report, annual report. They determined that the last year, the preceding year, the greenhouse gas emissions had reached a record high, which is pretty striking because it was a year of recession and manufacturing had declined. And they furthermore warned that the extent of global warming was coming very close to reaching what the main scientific consensus regards as a kind of a tipping point, a point beyond which it's irreversible, 2 degrees centigrade warming. I said that's coming close, and if we reach that point, they don't put it this way, but Mother Earth will be, our mother will be devouring the living Earth. Mother Nature will be devouring the living Earth. We can kiss each other goodbye. There won't be a possibility of a decent human existence. Well, there are things that can be done about that now, and there isn't a lot of time to waste. And things are being done. Most countries are doing at least something, taking at least halting steps towards addressing the problem. Unfortunately, that's not true of the countries where it matters most. The country where it matters most is, of course, the United States, the richest, most powerful country in history. And it not only is not taking halting steps, it's taking steps backwards. The Republican Congress now is dismantling programs instituted under Richard Nixon. That's an indication of what's happened in the past roughly 40 years. They're now dismantling programs under Nixon, who was in fact the last liberal president, if you actually look at the programs. And that's drawing backwards, pulling backwards the efforts to do something or other about global warming. There are much more positive directions. They are, in fact, coming mostly from the indigenous communities. In Ecuador, for example, with a substantial indigenous community, there are protests, serious protests. The government's kind of torn by them at the moment. The indigenous population is calling for an end to mining for oil, which is substantial. There's huge oil exploration with enormous environmental disaster associated with it, apparently much worse than the Gulf of Mexico disaster recently, actually in the Nigerian Delta. There's no doubt that the pollution and destruction is far greater than the Gulf of Mexico, but these are poor people, people of color, so it doesn't really matter what happens to them. Nobody pays attention, unlike the Gulf of Mexico. However, the native communities are demanding that all of this stop. They don't see any justification for destroying their lives, their culture, their societies, so that people can sit in traffic jams in New York in their SUVs. They argue that's not a fair exchange. The most striking case is actually Bolivia, where the indigenous population is a majority and have, in the past 10 years, entered the political arena, successfully elected someone from their own ranks as a poor peasant as president, and have been carrying, they're in fact taking the international lead now in taking steps towards doing something about global warming. That's the poorest country in South America, and it's kind of striking that the poorest country in South America is taking the international lead on this program, and the richest country, not only in the Western Hemisphere, but anywhere in the world, and in fact in history, is not only not contributing, but is drawing back, eliminating efforts to deal with it. One of the recent efforts in Bolivia was a legislation granting rights to nature. So in addition to human rights, there are now rights to nature. Nature has rights, and we have to observe them. Well, you know, sophisticated Westerners can mock this ridiculous idea, but the fact of the matter is that unless we are able to gain some of the sensibility of the indigenous populations, this is worldwide, the last laugh is almost certainly going to be on us.
Please support www.radiochomsky.org.